This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, we're in the Lone Star State today, actually broadcasting from the offices of Texas Values in the shadow of the state capitol here in Austin, Texas. Our team was here today for a Watchman Pastors Conference at the Capitol, and I was also here to testify in support of SB 6, the Texas Privacy Bill. I'll be joined by a number of those involved in today's events: Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values; Kaylee Triller Haver; and Pastor John Salvinson, someone who spoke out today at the Capitol, meeting with lawmakers and others. So they're going to join me. Also, I'm going to have a special co-host today. I don't do this often. In fact, I'm not sure I can remember ever doing it. But I'm going to have a co-host because he is he's an old radio veteran, also did television news, very similar background. The only thing he didn't do, I think, that I did was he was not a police officer. But he's been an elected official. He's been a radio talk show host, and he's been a TV reporter, and he's been a conservative leader here in the state of Texas. He is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Texas, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Governor, welcome to Washington Watch.
I'm honored to be your first co-host. That's quite an honor.
I don't think I've ever had a co-host in the 3 years I've been doing the program.
All the famous people.
Well, you know,
you have on the show.
It's just because I'm never short of words. And, yes. So, but we're here, and I want to thank you for joining us. I know you've got an extremely busy day because we started this morning a little after 7 o'clock at the state capitol. We've had the hearings, meetings, and we're going to talk a lot about that. But we're also going to talk a little bit later about big news out of Washington D.C., the introduction of the repeal replace bill for Obamacare. The question is it real? We're going to talk about that a little bit later here on the program. I'm also going to be taking your phone calls a little later. The Lieutenant Governor is going to stick around the entire hour, be with me, and he's going to take your phone calls. So be prepared. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, you can check it out at TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, today, a lot of activity here in Austin. You know, Austin's a pretty neat city. Governor, I kind of like it here.
It's a very neat city. As Rick Perry called it, though, it's the blueberry and a bowl of tomato soup, because it is the liberal Democrat center in a very Republican, the most Republican conservative state in the country.
It is, but I see a lot of cowboy boots. That makes me feel at home.
It's a great town, though. Let me tell you what. Politically, it is a very liberal town. It's a college town. But great restaurants, great entertainment. It's a great city.
Yes. My favorite meal, which I partake of at least 4 or 5 times a week, is our quesadillas.
Yes.
And you can certainly find – I had a good one for lunch here today in Austin. So I can speak
it's
for the
restaurants. It's great to have you here. We appreciate your support, the organization's support, Jonathan Sines and Texas Values and Rick Scarborough and Vision America and John Graves. As you know, over 300 pastors here for a 2-day conference and lobbying lawmakers on Senate Bill 6, which is the Texas Privacy Act, which would keep men out of ladies' rooms and stop schools from allowing boys and girls to share showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Governor. The Senate Bill 6, which you were kind of a driving force behind, Senator Lois Kolkhorst is the
author
of the bill, did a great job today as she introduced it to the committee. But this is in response to what the Obama administration started with Title VII and Title IX funding, basically forcing states to open their restrooms to male and female, regardless of their biological sex or their anatomy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If you look back at, just let's go 18 months ago, no one was talking about this, or 24 months ago, no one was talking about this anywhere in the country. The idea that we would become a nation, that we would take the men and ladies' words off of bathrooms and let anyone go anywhere at any time, or have boys and girls as young as 15 or 16 sharing showers, was just unthinkable. And then the mayor of Houston passed this ordinance. She wouldn't accept signatures from voters who wanted to put it on a ballot. It was appealed to the Supreme Court. Eventually, the Supreme Court ruled that it had to be put on the ballot, and the voters of Houston, a very Democrat city, probably a 70%, 75% Democrat city, voted that bill down against a relatively popular Democrat mayor, 61-39%, as the church. In my all my years, Tony, I've been in Texas since 79, I've never seen the church community finally get active as they were on that issue. And I've never seen the white, black, and brown church unite together. You know, as we often say in churches, churches are still one of the most segregated places in America, you know, and sadly. And they all came together, Republican, Democrat, all the leaders, and defeated that bill. And if you look at, so we thought it was over then. And then we had a superintendent in Fort Worth who issued a policy of erasing gender in a school district of 86,000. No more boys, no more girls, and anyone could go to any bathroom, showers. And we stopped that, and then we went to court and stopped Obama. And then we have a superintendent in another district in Texas now doing this, and some cities around the country in Texas. And what you see, Tony, is in every one of these instances, these were never voted on by the people or even shared with the people to get their opinion.
Right.
All behind closed doors,
right.
All in secret, no school board votes in the schools, no parental input, no voter input anywhere, because the people just reject it.
And what we have taking place here at the state capitol in Austin is the exact opposite, where the people are, in fact, right now, the testimony is still going on for Senate Bill 6 and opposed to Senate Bill 6. This is an open process, and this is how these types of policies are to be done.
Yes.
Through the legislative branch, through debate and discussion, crafting the policy that is in the best interest of the citizens.
Well, and, you know, we've seen it in America now most of my life. I grew up in Baltimore, and I remember Madeline Murray O'Hara taking prayer out of public school. She was the lady who drove it, and it was the courts. And so, and whether it's gay marriage, whether it's prayer out of public school, go down the list. Most of these issues, it's really changed the center of the values in our nation, would never pass by any legislature.
Right.
Would never be
right.
voted on by the majority of people. The majority of people would like to have prayer in public school. The majority of people, in fact, in Texas, when we had a constitutional amendment that marriage should be between a man and a woman several years ago, it passed, I forget what the exact number was, 76%. I mean, 76%. You can't get 76% to say that apple pie and mom, are number one and number two in America. I mean, 76%. So all of the, and today, 80% of Republicans in Texas, over 50% of Democrats, nearly 70% of Hispanic and African Americans support our bill. In other words, they're against men being
in
ladies.
It's common sense.
So we're having this shoved down our throats either by the courts or by executives behind closed doors or by presidents with what I view as an unconstitutional order, and I'm glad Donald Trump pulled it back.
Right. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, my guest, actually my co-host today. As I said, first time ever, I'm having a co-host here on the program. You and I spoke back in December.
Yes.
When this was still kind of, commentators were dissecting North Carolina and its impact upon North Carolina. Of course, the narrative out of there that the economy of the state had been torpedoed and the politics upset, all of which we found is not the case. In fact, we had testimony today from the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest.
One of my heroes.
He led the effort up there, and I tell you what, he really laid the facts out today. Now, we'll see if the media reports it, but he put the facts out there nonetheless. But you stepped into the breach and said, look, you called me, you said you want to address this issue in Texas. And I said, you know, this is going to be controversial. And you said, not a problem, it needs to be done. And you enlisted the help of one of our allies down here in Texas, who heads up Texas Values, Jonathan Sines.
Who's always there on all these key issues.
And we're using his office right now. So Jonathan, I'm going to bring you in this conversation. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, it is truly an honor to have you, and, you know, a great big welcome to Texas. So we're just happy to serve, and very important day today. And so having you here really raises the level of importance of this issue. But it's no surprise. I mean, your organization, Family Research Council, has always stand for faith, family, and freedom. And the place to be today, if you stand for those values, is right here in Texas at the Texas Capitol. So we're blessed to have you a part of the effort.
Well, let me get your thoughts today on yesterday, today, close to 300 pastors coming from across the state of Texas.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a long way to come for some of these guys. And they were here, and we're going to talk with one of those pastors a little bit later. But how encouraged are you as you see pastors responding to this, not just this issue of the showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms, but rather this, what I described yesterday as this deconstruction of our culture and our society?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a popular phrase at the Capitol that says, government belongs to those who show up. That's why our office is two blocks from the Capitol. We're here every day, and usually it's our team and staff and some of our friends. But to have pastors from across the state come down on one day, some of them have been here for 2 days, it just is so encouraging, gives you just a boost of adrenaline. But, you know, they speak for millions of people across the state. I mean, if you think about, you know, the 500 or 600 pastors that have been here over a couple of days, the average, you know, congregation, maybe 500 to 1,000. I mean, think the amount of people that they can reach. And I have seen in my 5 or 6 sessions at the Capitol, when pastors show up to the Capitol, elected officials notice. And so I'm glad they engaged on this issue like many others. And it brings a lot of awareness and focus to the issue that you can hardly manufacture. And so I could be there every day, and with the reach that we have, we can make an impact. But when we have the faith community behind us like we did today, there's really no limit to what we can do.
Jonathan, let me ask you this. We've worked together on a number of pieces of legislation over the years, sonogram bill that we passed back in 11, actually, but you and I started working on it in 2007, which has cut the abortion rate in Texas by about 20,000 babies a year. So that bill alone has saved nearly 50,000 babies' lives. And so obviously everyone was engaged on that bill to pass it. But even with that bill, I've never seen the Christian community, the church, come forward with as much enthusiasm is not probably the right word, but with passion is probably the right word, and determination to not let our schools force boys and girls into the showers together and not to let governments force men into ladies' rooms, government rooms that we're in charge of protecting the safety of women and children, which would be a library, a courthouse, a rest stop. You've been on this a long time. Have you ever seen the same level of passion and determination to see something through like this issue?
You know, I don't know that I have, Governor Patrick. And what's interesting about it is we have seen it at the local level, too. And so we have been involved in this issue in Fort Worth, in Houston, in Dripping Springs, other smaller communities. And so we know that people care about this issue, and so we were hoping they would also show up at the Capitol, and we're so encouraged that they do. But this touches everyone's lives in one way or another. But I also think because of what happened in Houston when we voted down that ordinance that allowed men and women's bathrooms 6139, they realize this is a battle that we can win.
Absolutely. Without question. Jonathan Sein, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for the use of your facility today.
Well, God bless you, Tony Perkins, and the great work that you and your team do at Family Research Council, and we're happy to have you. You're welcome anytime.
All right. Well, folks, don't go away. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick stays with me as we continue. We got some interesting things to share with you. We're going to be talking with one of the young ladies who testified today before the committee, and we're also going to be talking about a meeting that the governor and I had with a business representative. Very interesting. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours. And I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. And you shall not bring an abominable thing into your house, or you like it will be set apart for destruction. You shall utterly detest and abhor it, for it's devoted to destruction. Where does that come from? Well, it comes from God's Word. Deuteronomy 7:26. Such powerful words. Again, and you shall not bring an abominable thing into your house, or you like it will be set apart for destruction. Abominable things like godless movies, video games, hour after hour, unknowingly addicting, hour upon hour of texting. This is a problem. In addition, the verse states this, you shall utterly detest and abhor it, for it's devoted to destruction. Help us, God, to have righteous indignation, that we would know an abomination when we see it, and by God's grace, drive it out of our house. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this, Tuesday afternoon. I got to keep track of time there, Governor. It's you get lost when you're traveling across Texas.
Yeah, it takes about 700 miles from the Louisiana-Texas border to the New Mexico-Texas border, so you can take your while to cross the state.
I remember doing that on my honeymoon. My wife and I drove across. Couldn't afford to stay in a hotel, so we stayed in the car. But it was a long, long drive. That's been 30-some years ago. So
it's still a long drive.
It's still a long drive, but I can afford a hotel now.
Yes, there you go.
Governor, today, a great lineup of individuals to testify today, witnesses that came in to speak to the various aspects of the bill we talked about briefly. Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina, who came in and really debunked this whole idea that the North Carolina economy has been torpedoed by this. He said the impact has been less than 0.1% of the state's GDP.
Yeah, North Carolina is the second strongest economy in the country. CEO Magazine rates them as the number one place to visit. Now, we like to think Texas is a great place, and we are. We're growing very quickly. We've added 9 million people in the last 16 years, so we're growing rapidly, and businesses are moving here. But North Carolina has not lost a business. No one's moved away. No one that they know has not moved in. They've added 76,000 jobs since they passed HB2. Their convention business is the highest ever.
Right.
Hotel occupancy is up 5% over last year, as I recall him saying. And so there's just no indication, none whatsoever. They lost a basketball tournament. They lost, they lost this or that. He mentioned today that they're bringing in an equestrian event, a $400 million event that will be more than they brought in on the tournaments that they lost. So there's just no truth to it whatsoever, zero. And that's what really disturbs me, Tony, is, and we're going to get to this a little bit later, I know, we were talking with an executive of a very large, well-known national business, and they rejected the numbers even when we had the lieutenant governor tell them, face-to-face. And the media prints a lie, and then people read it, and they just keep, you know, it just, it, you know, it just keeps spinning round and round. And but the truth is, passing HB2 in North Carolina has not impacted that state in any negative way. You might argue it's positive. And in the city of Houston, where we passed it, where we stopped it from passing 2 years ago, Houston had a Super Bowl, a Final Four, is doing great. No one's not coming to Houston because we stopped men going in the ladies' rooms.
Yeah, it's the only thing they can hang their hat on, and it's designed to try to derail these efforts. But and we will talk more about that in a moment, Governor. But I want to transition now to one of the witnesses that came today from Washington State to speak to this issue. She's if you're a daily listener of Washington Watch, you may have caught her when she was on the program a few weeks ago. Kaylee Triller Haver, welcome again to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, let me just say this. I thought you did an outstanding job today in testifying. And folks, let me very quickly give you the overview of Kaylee, and then I'm going to ask her why she came all the way to Texas to speak to this. But she, for 17 years, worked in a YMCA as a communications director. Grew up around the YMCA, loved the YMCA. They decided they wanted to go and adopt this type of policy without telling anyone. Now, does that sound familiar? They want to do this behind closed doors. She was concerned about it. You expressed your concern to them, and they said, like it or leave it.
That's right.
And you spoke to it out of a personal concern for the children and the others who would be vulnerable in there, because you saw that, even experienced that.
That's right. And what I experienced, I mean, I was sexually traumatized for the first 10 years of my life. So it is a major language in my world and something I've had to work really hard to overcome and have made lots of bad decisions because of it. And it's just cost a lot. And so it's interesting to sit here and listen. And I understand from a business perspective, you have to care about your economy. But the part of me is just sitting here wondering, what is that magic number? At what point do we actually say, okay, well, girls, sorry, you're kind of out of luck now. Now it costs too much to keep you safe and to keep you, you know, private. And so what people don't understand, I think, is that a violation of privacy is an injury. It doesn't mean that somebody has to have ill intent. If I, as a female, am in my vulnerable spaces where I'm already being trained to protect myself and to you know, trust my instincts, and a male of any variety comes in and is naked without me allowing that, that's what the left likes to call rape culture. And that just strips me of my right. It's a dignity thing.
Right.
You know, it's a value statement
well,
to women.
Well, you spoke to this today in your testimony and at a press conference that we had this afternoon about women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is an issue that I think a lot of women are concerned about. And
right.
If they're not, they should be.
The bipartisan women. In fact, my friend Miriam also testified today. She is a Jewish lesbian on the far left of this issue. I've got radical feminist friends aligning with us on this. We've got a whole coalition now of left and right women realizing that gender identity regulations harm women wherever they exist. It's a women's issue.
I mean, and this is, to go back to what the testimony was about primarily today and what you spoke to, this is an issue of privacy and security. And no one today that I heard of, Governor, said that, you know, transgender people are the threat. It is
right.
The door that's being opened by adopting this policy that will, in many ways, silence women from speaking out. If they see something that doesn't look right, they'll be afraid to say something because they then might be charged with gender discrimination.
Which is what happens in my state. It's happened already. It's.
And I thought our chairman of the committee, Senator Huffman, who was a former prosecutor and judge, she made a great point. She said, on the books right now, there's a law against public lewdness. So if a man walked into a bathroom today and dropped his pants, he would be arrested. But if men are allowed to go into ladies' rooms, and a man goes into a ladies' room because he says he identifies as the female gender, he can drop his pants in front of a woman and it wouldn't be a crime.
So this is what people don't seem to comprehend what is happening here. Kaylee, we're up against a break. Can you stick around for just a little bit more?
Sure.
I got a couple more questions I'd like to ask you. Governor, I know you're not going anywhere because you're my co-host. So you're stuck for the hour.
Honorary first time ever co-host.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you, you know, I don't know, maybe, I don't know that that comes with cowboy boots, but maybe a cowboy hat or a cowboy microphone.
Cowboy microphone. Actually, yeah. I see a chocolate chip cookie. It'll do just fine.
We can handle that. All right, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, my co-host today. We're going to continue our conversation with Kaylee. Then we're going to be talking to one of the pastors that was here today in the conference and did some lobbying. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, certainly the news of the week is going to be repeal and replace Obamacare. I debate whether it is a repeal of Obamacare. I thought that's where we were going. Sure doesn't look like it to me. It looks like the tweaking of Obamacare. Still seeing taxes, still seeing penalties. The biggest issue that I note with it is the idea that what about crossing state lines? What about competition? What about broadening exposure for insurance companies so that they can be more competitive and get into the competitive battles that we need to see in healthcare? How about all of those things? They were all things that were promised. The question is, are we going to see them? If we don't see them, this may be a plan that the GOP doesn't want to own. But we're going to have to depend on committee, because from what I read, none of those things appear as though they're going to happen. There's still going to be penalties if you're without insurance for more than 60 days. The difference is the penalties are getting paid to the insurance company, not the government. How about pharmaceuticals? What are we doing with prescriptions? All of those things are supposed to be revised and to be beneficial for the average American. This does not have a good economic impact for America, no matter how you look at it. And I must admit, I looked at it far closer from an economic perspective than I did an actual healthcare perspective. But I'm concerned about the economy of the average family. And without competitiveness, without broadening the base, without getting rid of exchanges, I don't know that it's going to have a positive impact on the economy of an individual or a family.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to the Lone Star State version of Washington Watch today. Actually, this is Austin Watch today and today only. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And a little bit later, I hope to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234, if we get the time. But lots to talk about here as we've been in Texas, working with pastors, working with legislators as they have introduced Senate Bill 6, Texas Privacy Act. I want to continue my conversation with Kaylee Triller Haver. She is from Washington State, came all the way down here to Texas to testify on behalf of this bill. And Kaylee, I want to ask you first, why? You know, why? I mean, look, I understand, you know, what's happening in Washington State. You've been involved in Washington State in this effort,
right?
But you've come all the way down here to Texas to speak out on this issue. And people, folks, you need to realize that it doesn't matter who it is when they speak out on these issues, even though it's common sense, public safety. Most of those of you, most of you listening, would think it's a no-brainer. It's not so. A lot of people attack other people for speaking out on this issue. So Kaylee, why come down here to Texas?
I think that most of us who care about this issue in any capacity across the country, Texas, this is the lightning rod bathroom case right now. We know that what happens here in Texas will dramatically affect our work across the rest of the country. I'm working in one of the most difficult states for all of this stuff to pass. And so it does matter a lot, because I think the message is, and I hate to be this open about it, but if we can't get this done in Texas, can we get this done in Washington?
I think you are absolutely right, and I do think, Governor Patrick, you and I spoke about this, that Texas is critical in this debate. And I think, you know, North Carolina took the stand. There's still pockets of resistance. There's efforts to try, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit about our meeting this afternoon with a business leader, national business leader. They're still trying to get North Carolina to repeal this. I think Kaylee's absolutely right. I think if Texas deals with this head on, as you are, it's going to, in many ways, put this to rest.
Well, we're going to deal with it in the Texas Senate. And when I called you in December, and I was so grateful that you said, yes, I'll help. And then we reached out to other groups like Vision America and Texas Values, because we can't do this alone. This is what your listeners need to just fully embrace. As an elected official, we're just one person, one vote, or one leader, in my case, Lieutenant Governor. I have to have the support from the people, from the pastors, from the people who care about these things. If you're not involved in government, government will run over you. It will take your money away. It will take your rights away. It will take your values away. And in Texas, you know, I'm proud of our legislature. I'm particularly proud of the Texas Senate, where I've served now for 11 years, 2 years as Lieutenant Governor. I didn't have the votes in January in the Senate, right, but we had to make the case. We had to turn around that narrative that was the lies out in the media day after day about what happened in North Carolina, how it would impact Texas. And we've turned that around, and we'll vote this bill out of committee tonight and vote it over to the House next week. And we're going to have God's effort there, because the Speaker has said it's not important to him, and that's disappointing. I do know that if it comes to the floor, it will pass. We have 94 Republicans out of 150 members. They need 76 votes to pass it. There's no Republican worth his salt, quite frankly, and I'll just say it.
Right.
That would vote and honestly be able to go back and face his constituency or her constituency of 80% of the polls, where the people say, you just voted against a bill that would have protected my kids, my teenagers, and their privacy, and my wife and my daughter and my mom. So we're going to need all the effort that Tony Perkins has and the pastors of Texas and Texas Values, and my job is to get out of the Senate, and we'll do that.
Kaylee, one final question for you. As the governor mentioned about pastors, you spoke today. You and I spoke to the pastors that were gathered here at the state capitol. I know you've had some challenges in Washington State to get pastors engaged in this, even though this is a moral, a spiritual issue. They don't want to take it on.
That's right.
What was your sense today as you saw the pastors gathered here in Austin?
I was so fueled and encouraged by what I saw today from the pastors. These are people who not only get it, but are bold. And I think bold begets bold. And what was frustrating for me in Washington is knowing that, you know, people are looking to their leaders to lead. And they're going to do whatever they see is modeled for them. And so when I see as many pastors as I saw today, you could feel it. I don't know if you could. I could feel the energy in the room. I could feel the enthusiasm and the resolve to get this done. And that really encouraged me that there's boldness left in the church.
And you know, Tony, I think this is, and again, our pastors in Texas engaged in Houston to stop that.
Right.
But I also think there's a carryover from the November election. Donald Trump would not have won the election. Big win, but still narrow victories in some states without the church community stepping up.
Without question.
And I believe the reason they stepped up, because they were really focused more than anything on the Supreme Court and the Constitution. And so people embraced that. And when a lot of people say voters really don't pay attention to the issues, no, they paid attention to that issues. And that was the difference maker that got people out of the church pews. And now I think we're seeing a residual of that, a positive residual of that, of people have realized, you know what? In Houston, we stopped that ordinance.
Right.
In America, we stopped
can
Hillary Clinton.
Do it.
And now we can do it if we join
yes,
together.
We can.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, hadn't I heard that somewhere before? Kaylee, thank you so much. Thank you for your courage, because your courage is absolutely inspiring others to take courage. So thank you
so much. Thanks for coming to Texas.
Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. We're here in Austin, Texas. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, my honorary co-host for the day. We're going to be back with more. We're going to be joined by one of the pastors who was here today at the pastors' conference and then went out and began to speak to their legislators. Don't go away. We're coming back with lots more after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. OneNewsNow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit OneNewsNow.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, along with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, my co-host today here in Austin, Texas, as we're broadcasting. Well, it's good to be here.
You know, I have a saying that I came up with a few years ago, and that's that no one moves to Texas. They arrive here, and Texas moves into them. So you're not moving here, Tony, but just being here for, you know, a little bit more than 24 hours, I can tell Texas is already moving into you. It's seeping in.
Yeah, well, you know, it's right there on the border of Louisiana. I know you have Louisiana envy. You just want to be like Louisiana. Is what it is. Today, pastors from across the state, yesterday and today, gathered here in Austin. Today, briefing up on here at the Capitol in Austin for a briefing, and then heading out to talk to their legislators. And one of those pastors is one of our Watchmen pastors, Pastor John Salveson. He is the pastor of Bear Creek Bible Church in Keller, Texas, and he's the president of the Keller Pastor Alliance. Pastor John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
You had a little ways to go. You came from north of Fort Worth, so a little bit of a drive for you.
It was, but it was very worth it.
Now, let's talk first about the pastors gathering, hearing what was going on. I know you're engaged. You're a Watchman pastor. Your sense of your takeaway from these other pastors that gathered from across the state?
It was electric. It was very enthusiastic. People were encouraged that the leadership of the Family Research Council, Texas Values, these four pro-life, pro-family groups coming together as a coalition, united, working together to put this event on, to inform the pastors. And the pastors were very encouraged to see all this and experience it, get the information, and then also take that information and apply it through the lobbying that we did this afternoon. So yesterday afternoon and this morning we had the briefing and the encouragement and the information from all the different speakers, Lieutenant Governor, Ken Paxton, yourself, others, were just amazing.
Pastor John, I want to play off something my co-host said here a few moments ago, and that is that there's kind of a sense that after the election and other events that have occurred in the last 18 months, that there's a new sense of optimism that we can make a difference. Is that a sense that the pastors have, that, you know what, my voice can make a difference?
Absolutely. I see it in my congregation. People, I've been preaching on pro-life, pro-family issues for 25 years. And I've been involved in the pro-life movement for 35 years, and I've never seen it as good as it is right now. In terms of enthusiasm, a focus, optimism, it's very strong right now. And I think that's spreading out to other pastors, too. Pastors have to reject fear. I preach a pro-life sermon in every year in January, and families come up to me and hug me who are new to the church. So it doesn't scare people away. It might scare a few people away, but there's a net gain. And then with the people who are there, they're enthusiastic.
Yeah, that there's no question about it. That what my experience is that the pastors who are all in, they get congregations that are all in. And in fact, they have people leaving other churches to come to be a part of a church that's making a difference. Look, we don't have time to sit in pews and just bide our time. We've got to go and win the lost and impact the culture.
Yeah, and I think another thing that's happening is I've passed the 60 marks. So I've been around for a while. I've never seen the country so divided, but I've never seen the country so clearly secular on one side and faith-based on the other. And so I think what's happened is for the churches, literally they become a refuge. They become an oasis of people with shared values and faith. And they almost feel like they are maybe not outnumbered because they're not, but they feel like the world's against them. So they come into the church and they're looking for leadership now.
Right.
What can we do?
Right. But part of that is by design of government. This last administration, yes, wanted to quarantine faith,
yes,
within the four walls of the church. I mean, even the president using the term, former president, using the term, you know, freedom of worship versus freedom of religion.
Yes.
Worship is what takes place in a building, you know, from their definition. Freedom of religion is ability to live according to your faith.
Well, and so I think when these church, the members come, they're looking for leadership from their pastor.
Right.
You know, it's not enough to say go vote, because people say, well, go vote for what and
right,
why? And so I think our churches are getting much better and bolder in that regard. And to underscore your point, Tony, back in Houston when we fought off this ordinance in Houston that allowed men in ladies' rooms, the mayor of that city said that all the pastors had to send in their sermons.
Right, I remember.
To her.
Yeah, that's what galvanized the opposition.
That really, I mean, imagine that, yeah, in America.
Well, it just shows you how out of touch politicians are, because, you know, you don't have to subpoena me to get one of my sermons.
Right.
I'll be happy.
Well, that's what my pastor, Dr. Ed Young, said. I'm happy to send it if she promises to read it.
Well, that may be going too far.
And so we passed, I'm looking at it right behind you, the Texas Pastor Protection Law. We passed that in the last Senate. So that, and this time we are passing, and that meant that no pastor, no church employee would have to perform a gay marriage, for example. They couldn't be forced to protect them. Now this session, in fact, probably tomorrow or next week, I'm not sure when it's coming up on the bill, we're going to pass the Sermon Protection Act so that no government official can ever subpoena your sermons.
Pastor Salmonson, let me ask you another question, because today you mentioned just a moment ago that after the briefing this morning, you went out and you lobbied. I use the term lobby. You talked to legislators, your legislator, your House member. You know, Pastor, you're here in the state capitol. What kind of response did you get?
Well, it was positive. It was very positive. There was no reason to be afraid or be intimidated or anything. They wanted to talk to us, and they wanted to interact with us, asking questions and pointing out things that they're trying to do. They want to please us. And so it's a two-way street. So we went and interacted with them and got good response.
And I can speak to this from experience. It's a great opportunity for pastors to build relationships and minister. I used to take pastors when I was in Louisiana, and as a legislator, I would take a group of pastors every year to Washington and just take them around to offices just to pray for senators and congressmen. And it got to the point where they would call me and say, hey, when are you going to bring some more pastors up? We want somebody to pray with us. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a difficult job. And Governor, you can speak to the loneliness sometimes that these lawmakers have when they're getting hit by every side. And just a pastor coming alongside and sharing with them their concerns about issues, but also being willing just to pray with them can make a huge difference.
Makes a huge difference. We are surrounded by our enemies. I always pray for my enemies. That's what we are told to do in Scripture.
I'm not sure I'd ever get up off my knees.
But we, most people who think we're doing a good job don't call and say you're doing a good job. And that's fine.
Yeah.
We don't expect them to. Most people, for example, aren't engaged in the general public on this bill because they assume we're going to pass it. Of course you're going to pass a bill to keep men out of
Well, leader. When you've got, you know, on the average 66% yes. or more of the public supportive of it, they think this is a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. So what you normally face and hear are the opposition. And, you know, I'm always willing to sit down and listen to respectful opposition on any issue. I owe that to the public.
And you did that today.
In
fact,
today.
I sat in with you as we met with a business CEO of a national company, came in to talk. And frankly, I'm not going to mention the company, I'm not going to mention the name, but I'm just going to say his logic did not hold water.
No, you could see he was very uncomfortable because he couldn't answer the question. And his company, like every other company, Tony, that I've talked to, and this is a major company that everyone would know instantly, people are curious, okay, who is that? Let's just, never mind. But, you know, if you have to fly somewhere, you might be on them. So this, I said, I just have a question for you. What's the policy in your executive offices? Do you have men's and ladies' rooms? Well, yes. What's the policy for your customers? Well, men and ladies' rooms. And furthermore, then I ask him the question that they never want to answer, and that is, does your company support boys and girls showering together, 15-year-olds. Well, no. And, well, that's the question.
He would not answer.
If you oppose the bill, then that's what you support.
But the narrative out there, he said, the narrative is that you're hostile towards certain people, that you're discriminatory.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the chance, but I wanted to ask him, have you read the bill?
Yes.
Have
he
you
said
actually
later
read the bill?
He did, but he,
oh, he did. Okay.
Because our bill says, first of all, that no government entity can tell what business what they should do with their bathroom policy. We leave it up to customers. Businesses and their customers will speak like they have against Target. That is spiraling
that
downward.
We did discuss.
Yes.
And I said, I told him, you know, look at Target. Their demise is directly linked to this
policy
that they've adopted.
And of the hundreds and hundreds of businesses that have signed up against the bill, I have not been able to find one, not one, that allows men in ladies' rooms or ladies in men's rooms.
Right.
And I will also tell you, everyone, I haven't talked to hundreds, but I've talked to dozens and dozens, and all of them say, Dan, I agree with you. I don't support this, but you know, I just have to be, you know, my CEO says
the hypocrisy is just too much. Pastor John, before I let you go here, I just want to know, what are your takeaways as you go home, when you go back to your church at Bear Creek Bible Church? What are you going to be sharing with your folks?
Well, tomorrow morning I have a meeting with the Keller Pastoral Alliance, and I'm going to be talking to them about this. We're organizing the National Day of Prayer. That's our primary point on the agenda. But I'm going to be talking to them about what I experienced here in the last 2 days. I'm so thankful to Family Research Council, Texas Values, all the organizations that sponsored this. And so all the resources that went into it are multiplied 1,000 times over in terms of their effectiveness. And so I'll be talking to other pastors tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock about this. You can count on that. And also my congregation. I always talk about these issues, and I'm noticing that they're more enthusiastic than ever to hear about it and also do something about it, to apply what they're learning. They're being inspired. They're being informed. And so they want to go out and vote right, but also influence legislation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the informed part is so critical. You know, because you got to have the knowledge, and I just want to thank you for being a Watchman pastor.
Our culture is losing its grip on common sense.
Yeah, it is.
And so when the people at the grassroots see some leaders come up, like you gentlemen, and Ken Paxton and others, many others, and they see that, they're inspired and they want to follow because they know it's wrong.
Right.
But there's this cloud of political correctness that hopefully we're dissipating.
Yeah. Well, one pastor at a time, we're making it happen. Pastor John Salvinson, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for your leadership.
Yeah, and our goal is, I think you mentioned the very beginning, Tony, and I know not everyone listens every minute. Our goal
here,
Operation, Operation 1 Million Voices in Texas. Yeah. Because if you take the average-sized church, and we're going to have 1,000 pastors here by the end of April coming and going, and they reach out to 2 and 3 churches, and you multiply the numbers in the mailing list, I mean, we will reach 1 million activists.
Yeah,
in this,
it'd be great, pastors in Texas, take a selfie there on the stage on the platform Sunday with your congregation in the background and send it to us, and we'll have evidence of the million voices. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest host, honorary guest host today, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. All right, I promise you, before we left at the top of the program, I told you we're going to give you an update on the breaking news out of Washington, D.C. today. Finally, a measure has been introduced through the reconciliation process to repeal and replace Obamacare. But there's some issues with the original measure that's been introduced. And joining me now to talk about this, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Family Research Council, David Christensen. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be back, Tony.
All right. I know you've had it. You and I spoke earlier today. I've spoken with some members on Capitol Hill that have concerns about the bill. We're going to address it from the standpoint of, the issues that we deal with, primarily the issue of life, which, by the way, for those that remember back when Obamacare was being debated and on the verge of passing, it almost didn't pass until the president offered the executive order saying abortion wouldn't be funded. So abortion has long been an issue in Obamacare. That, again, is an issue with some of the aspects of this replacement plan.
That's correct. I mean, Obamacare does subsidize health care coverage and health care plans that include elective abortion, and his promise of an executive order was a fig leaf that did nothing to stop the flow of taxpayer dollars for abortion. The repeal bill, the repeal part of this bill, would rescind the Obamacare premium credits that subsidize elective abortion. Has some good provisions in it, similar to what passed in 2015. The concern is the replace provisions, and there are some pro-life policies in that to prevent credits from paying for plans that have abortion. There's this new state fund to states to allow states to use the money for their health care needs. That has a provision that restricts abortion funding. But it does appear to us that there might be a loophole where some taxpayer funds can subsidize abortion through certain savings accounts. So we're concerned about that, and we're raising those concerns on Capitol Hill.
And we've communicated that with leadership. They're working on it. So, folks, we're not yet ready to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on this. There's some issues that are being worked on, but we're making progress on the repeal of Obamacare. Defunding of Planned Parenthood is in this reconciliation bill. So
that's correct.
Still hopeful that we're going to get something out of this, right, David?
That's right. I mean, the Planned Parenthood language is in the bill. That's creating consternation for a lot of the Democrats. But the bill is complicated, of course, but it does some conservative things. We're trying to make sure that the pro-life issue is rock solid.
All right. David Christensen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Governor, you hear that music?
Yes.
That means the show's over.
Yeah, fast hour.
It goes really fast, doesn't it? I gotta bring you back and
enjoyed it.
You can be my co-host again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being our friend, our supporter, praying for us. It's a battle on many levels. Again, we'll win it in the Texas Senate, and I'll hand it over to the churches. I'll hand it over to God, and what is the scripture? Proverbs 21:31. The horses may be ready for battle, but the victory is the Lord's.
And folks, you know what you need to do. You need to stand. If you're in Texas, stand with the Lieutenant Governor and with common sense and with safety and privacy.
It's a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.